Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, how to catch a beautiful pair in the night sky, the planets Venus and Jupiter. And a leading scientist tells her discovery that DNA acts like a wire in the body electric. Here's a scientist soundbite.
If you haven't gone out after sunset and looked in the evening sky for these two very bright planets, be sure to look for them now. Now is when they're getting really, really, really close together. They're going to be really great by the middle of March.
That's renowned sky watcher Deborah Bird. More with her later, but first, science news of the week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
In research published online in the journal PLOS-1 on February 13th, researchers at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis announced that they have identified a potent regulator for sensitivity to insulin, the hormone that controls blood sugar levels. The new findings might help scientists find better treatments for type 2 diabetes, obesity, and other health problems caused by the body's inability to properly regulate blood sugar.
The U.S. Geological Survey reported on the evening of February 14th, U.S. time, that a 6.0 magnitude earthquake had struck some 160 miles off the coast of Oregon. The Pacific Tsunami Warning Center did not issue a tsunami warning, and there were no immediate reports of damage or injuries. The USGS reported that the quake was felt as far away as San Francisco.
Cyclone Giovanna made landfall in Madagascar, an island country off the southeast coast of Africa, in the early morning of February 14th. There were many reports of damage and flooding across the nation, although news came in slowly as many areas were without electricity. At this recording, it appears that at least 16 people in Madagascar died from Giovanna, which had intensified into a monster Category 4 storm with sustained winds of 145 miles per hour as it approached Madagascar, but weakened slightly prior to making landfall.
Meanwhile, a team of researchers have discovered four new tiny chameleon species in Madagascar. They are the world's smallest chameleons and some of the smallest reptiles in existence, according to a paper published February 15th in the online journal PLOS-1. They are so small that they fit comfortably on the head of a match. The four species look similar, but scientists conducted genetic analysis to prove that they are in fact four distinct species.
Work published in the Journal of Cell Science describes research from the University of Melbourne that holds hope for those suffering from one of the Earth's most widespread diseases, malaria. Malaria is caused by a parasite. Those who have it experience high fevers, shaking chills, flu-like symptoms, and anemia. The new research shows how the parasite that causes malaria in humans changes into a banana shape before sexual reproduction. This finding might explain how the malaria parasite invades the human immune system and could provide targets for vaccine or drug development. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. Our song of the week is Sparks by Jesse Woods off his EP Moon Rocks. Enjoy.
Wish I could take your lips with me on the road, wherever I'd be. I'd kiss you goodnight in a far off moonlight. I wish I could take your lips with me, listen to your little voice sing along with the radio, a song that someone else wrote, but I don't care. Just need you here. I wish I could take your eyes with me, show you all the things I've seen. My favorite Mexican bar, open air and big bright stars. Wish I could take your eyes so blue, my second favorite part of you. Probably looking at some other man, southern gentleman, steal your hand. But I'll stand up and I'll keep the mouth shut. And I see a spark in the making. I hope the rain don't come too soon. You've got a hand for the taking. And I'm about to take it to the moon. I see a spark in the making. I hope the rain don't come too soon. You've got a hand for the taking. And I'm about to take it to the moon. And I'm about to take it to the moon. Late night we sing our song. We sing it slow to make it last long. Sparks growing to wildfire. Two birds loving all the while. Late night we talk in our sleep. Joke about the things that we usually keep. Never been crazy like this. Check my eyes and tell me what it is. I'm sick for you, and there's nothing I can do. And I see a spark in the making. I hope the rain don't come too soon. You've got a hand for the taking. And I'm about to take it to the moon. I see a spark in the making. I hope the rain don't come too soon. You've got a hand for the taking. And I'm about to take it to the moon. And I'm about to take it to the moon. I'm about to take you to the moon. I'm about to take you to the moon.
Find us as EarthSky on Facebook, EarthSky Science on Twitter, and at EarthSky.org. Deborah Bird joins us now with news of the night sky, a late February treat for sky watchers, the planets Venus and Jupiter. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, Jorge. I've talked about Venus and Jupiter before this on this show, but if you have not looked for them, if you haven't gone out after sunset and looked in the evening sky for these two very bright planets, be sure to look for them now. Now is when they're getting really, really, really close together. They're going to be really great by the middle of March.
So how bright are they?
Well, these two planets are the first and second brightest planets in the sky, and in fact, they're the third and fourth brightest celestial objects in the sky. So there are only two celestial objects brighter than Venus and Jupiter, and that's the Sun and the Moon.
Okay. So when can people see Jupiter and Venus in the sky?
Well, all you have to do is go outside after sunset, and you can see them from any place on the globe. You just want to go outside as soon as the sun goes down, look toward the western sky. The very, very super bright object there is the planet Venus, and then look a little higher in the sky. The slightly fainter object, but still brighter than anything else around, is the planet Jupiter.
And what about that other bright object in the sky, the moon?
Well, as it turns out, the moon is going to be passing near Venus and Jupiter pretty soon. It's going to do this a couple of times over the next couple of months. And the next time you're going to get to see the moon near Venus and Jupiter starts around February 23rd or 24th. It's going to be a crescent moon in the evening sky after sunset, and you'll get to see this beautiful crescent moon passing near these planets over a period of days. So February 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th, even the 28th, you'll be able to see the moon near Venus and Jupiter.
And there's something else special coming up with Venus later in the year, is that right?
Well, what's going to happen first is that Venus and Jupiter are going to get much, much closer together, so that by the middle of March, they're going to be super close together in the western twilight sky. So if you start watching them now, you're going to get to see them draw closer and closer and closer together until around mid-March. And then after mid-March, Jupiter's going to drop into the sunset and disappear. Venus will stay around for another couple of months, But by June, Venus will have disappeared also. It will have followed Jupiter into the sunset. And then in early June, something really exciting is going to happen.
Yeah, so tell us about that.
Well, what's going to happen is that Venus, which is an inner planet, it orbits the sun closer than we do, is going to pass in front of the sun as seen from Earth. And this is going to happen on June 5th or June 6th, depending on where you are on the globe. We in the United States are going to see it in the afternoon of June 5th. We'll see the first several hours of the transit. And Venus is going to look like, you're going to have proper eye protection for this, preferably a telescope. But if you have that, Venus is going to look like a little black dot moving in front of the sun's face.
Yeah, so we'll have instructions of how to do this with it. You don't want to just point, look into a telescope at the sun, nothing like that.
Absolutely not. You have to have a proper solar filter on a telescope to be able to do this. And we'll have all of that information at earthsky.org, how to protect your eyes so that you can see this event, this amazing event on June 5th.
It is an amazing event. I mean, it's an event that has a long history, a long scientific history as far as astronomers go, and it's something that anybody can do with a telescope.
That's right. And what's really amazing about this event is that this is the last time that Venus is going to do this in this century. Venus won't cross in front of the sun again for another century. So, you know, all of us alive today are going to have one chance to see this, and that's coming up on June 5th.
That's amazing. Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Sky, we interview the world's top scientists. The chemistry of DNA, the library of life, is much richer than anyone has imagined. That's according to Jacqueline Barton of the California Institute of Technology. Dr. Barton received a U.S. National Medal of Science for her discovery that living cells use the double strands of DNA like a wire to send long-range signals. Her research is at the forefront of scientists' understanding of how cells detect and repair defects in DNA from oxidative stress associated with aging and diseases like Alzheimer's and cancer. Jacqueline Barton speaks to us from the studios of NPR station KPCC in Pasadena. Dr. Barton, welcome.
It's nice to be here.
I'd like to have you tell us about some research that you've been recently recognized for by President Obama. You received a National Medal of Science. And this is a research that discovered that DNA acts like a wire in a cell. Tell us what's happening here and what is that wire doing?
Yeah, so first of all, it was an extraordinary honor to be recognized for the work. And I really just represent all the people that work with me, all the graduate students and postdocs who really carry out the work. So it's enormously gratifying to have their work represented in this way. So we think about DNA usually as the library of the cell. It encodes all the information that makes us what we are. But it also turns out that when you look at the chemical structure, the molecular structure of DNA, that DNA, that spiral staircase that we think about in terms of the double helix, the steps of the spiral staircase are really actually stacked one on top of another. And it turns out that the DNA polymer, that double helix, looks a lot like solid-state materials that are quite conductive. And so very soon after Watson and Crick first proposed the structure of DNA, chemists started asking, well, gee, does this structure have the same characteristic of being conductive? But that was a while ago. That was a long time ago, over 50 years ago. And about 20, 30 years ago, it reached the point that now chemists could actually synthesize a little piece of DNA and know exactly what's connected to what, and essentially attach little, what we did was we attached little molecular probes on either sides of the DNA double helix to ask whether or not you can shoot an electron from one side of the DNA to the other side of the DNA. And that's sort of how it all started.
What's new about this research?
Okay, so first we just thought about it in terms of this chemical characteristic, okay? And what we found out that actually electrons and holes could move through DNA. So we usually think about DNA, as I said, as the information, the library, because DNA encodes the RNA. RNA is sort of like taking a Xerox copy of what's in the library. And then from the RNA, then you go through the ribosome machine, and you make proteins. And the proteins that are made are encoded by the sequence of base pairs in DNA. But so the nucleus of all of our cells are filled with 3 billion base pairs of information in the DNA. But some of our cells have to become a nose cell and make some proteins get expressed, and others of our cells have to make other proteins get expressed. And all that information's in the library. And so now you have to think about, well, what happens, let's say, when a cell is under stress? And the cell is under stress and it has to activate a response to that stress. Well, what we've been finding is that actually the information has to get coordinated across the library, because a lot of proteins have to get made, a lot of things have to happen. And maybe that signaling across the nucleus of the cell, across the DNA-containing genome, some of that may be actually happening by using DNA as a wire. And in particular, what we've focused on so far is, turns out that your library of the cell is a very important library, but it's getting damaged all the time, especially if you don't eat your broccoli. And when the DNA gets damaged, that damage has to get fixed, or else that information in the library can't be used anymore. And it turns out that in each of our cells, we have this exquisite repair machinery, little proteins that are constantly sifting through your DNA to find mistakes and fix them. Now, what we found out while we were doing these very basic chemistry experiments on DNA as a wire is that DNA can be a good wire, but it's only a good wire if all the bases are stacked on top of each other, the steps on the spiral staircase. And if the DNA isn't damaged, if those bases aren't damaged, if there is a little mistake in the DNA, then it's not a good wire anymore. Sort of the way to think about it, it's like a stack of copper pennies, and that stack of copper pennies can be conductive. But if one of the pennies are a little bit awry, if it's not stacked so well, then you're not going to be able to get good conductivity. And it's similar in the case of the DNA double helix. So now let's go back to thinking about our DNA getting damaged all the time, and how those repair proteins have to find those mistakes in the 3 billion bases of DNA. Well, we sort of think that what happens is that nature uses DNA like a wire, and it's sort of like two telephone repairmen trying to find a mistake in the line. If they can talk to each other, if these repair proteins can talk to each other across the DNA, then the DNA is just fine. So they don't have to repair that region, and they can go someplace else. If there's a mistake in the DNA, then they can't talk to each other so well, and so then that allows them to hone in on where the mistake is. So from starting out over 20 years ago now and in synthesizing little pieces of DNA and seeing if we can shoot an electron up or down it, we've sort of come now to the point of saying nature uses this for long-range signaling and for finding mistakes in DNA.
I mean, I think that's just amazing. I mean, we're talking about 3 billion
base pairs, these rungs in the molecule of DNA. Just one little rung here or there could make a big difference.
It can make an enormous difference. That's how people, it turns out that when you have cancer, it's often associated with defects in your repair machinery. It's not so much that you have one mistake, and yeah, one mistake can be incredibly detrimental. But now let's imagine if you have a mistake in one of these repair proteins. That means they're not fixing the damage. And so anytime you get damage, that damage gets amplified and it gets worse and worse and worse. And so, you know, some people have a genetic predisposition to colon cancer. It turns out that genetic predisposition is because they have a defect in their repair machinery, in the proteins that find those mistakes. And so it's incredibly important that we're always finding those mistakes in DNA and fixing them. And we're learning that the way to find those mistakes in the DNA is shooting electrons through the DNA helix.
You've been listening to Jacqueline Barton, a professor of chemistry at the California Institute of Technology. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't hurt us.